Oh, good day, everyone everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Christ Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and this is our Prophecy Reality Edition. So if you're listening live on a Wednesday morning, come on over to FirstAmendmentRadio.net and click on the chat button there and join us in the chat room. We're publishing what I'm calling the quincentennial edition of the Horae Apocalypticae, and going through it, you know, word by word, chapter by chapter, and I've been sharing some of that with you, and thought, well, I'll share some more with you today. I have a link here. Let me put it in the chat room so people can jump in with me. And this is the chapter, well, one of the chapters we just published. Well, it's a beautiful, sunny morning here in California, and in our undisclosed location in the southern Sierra foothills of California here. Tom knows where it is. That is WW in the chat room, because he's actually been here. And a few other people that show up in the chat room occasionally have been here also. And people are welcome to visit me if they want to, and just, you know, email me, get a hold of me, and we'll make arrangements, and you can come out and stay at the ranch for a day, a week, whatever. We don't worry about it. Okay, but that's an aside. Let's go to that link I just put in the chat room. And that takes us directly to that chapter posting there. Let me put that on the screen too, so everybody can see it in case. And this is, I guess, one of E.B. Elliott's drawings at the top there that you see is, and if you go down, you see it's chapter 4 of volume 3, the seven-headed, ten-horned sea beast. And he says, now we proceed to the exposition of the two apocalyptic visions of the beast from the abyss and the sea. Now, chapter 12, the same beast comes out of the abyss. And in chapter 13, he's referred to as coming out of the sea in two different forms, at two different times. Taking that of chapter 13 as our basis, but interweaving the important intimations that occur in the vision of chapter 17, and also here and there as occasion may require, making a reference to the other prophecies on the same subject, whether Daniel, Paul, or John. The reader will have observed that in chapter 13, the anti-Christian power and his actions were exhibited in under a triform configuration, symbols being exhibited not only of the ten-horned beasts, but also the lamb-like two-horned beasts, his associate, and of what is called the image of the beast. Now, it seems to me indubitable that of these it is the sea beast, or rather its ruling head, there was given unto him a mouth that is the principle. I pray the reader to satisfy himself on this point ere he pass on. The earth beast acting declaredly only as his agent and directing his efforts to make the world worship the first beast. And it seems equally indubitable, as I have indeed already shown, that it is the mouth of this first, which, however certain expositors may have otherwise represented it, answers to Daniel's little horn, the one, as the other, being said to have a great mouth that spoke blasphemies against God, the one, as the other, to have had the saints given into his hand, the one, as the other, to lord it over the ten contemporary kingdoms as his inferiors or subjects, the one as the other. And he's speaking of the beast from the abyss and the sea, but we know they're the same, whereas people may try to separate them, say they're two separate beasts, but they're just depicted at different times in different visions. In one, in chapter 12, the beast comes out of the abyss, and that is pagan Rome. And then we have the beast that comes out of the sea with its papal head, speaking great things and blasphemies and going to perdition eventually. As his inferior subjects, of course, the 10 contemporary kingdoms are represented by the 10 horns, the one as the other, to have had the period assigned for him prospering of 42 months, or the 1260 years, or the time times and half a time. The fulfillment of all this is now my business, says E.B. Eliot, to trace in the character of history of the Roman popes and papal Christendom, the popes themselves answering, as I conceive, to the beast's last ruling head with the great mouth and the decem regal empire and power, subordinate to and inspired by him in Western Europe, to the beast's body, just according to the explanation that I gave of the same beast in the vision of the two witnesses, it being then and there mentioned anticipative in the apocalyptic record as their precursor and murderer. To this primary beast in the vision, I shall confine myself in the present and the next chapter. Now, in entering on the consideration of that which, as I have said, is to be alone our present subject, the beast from the abyss and the sea, a sea, let me here again observe, that seems probably from the context to mean the flood just before mentioned of the invading Goths. Now, this is something that I found peculiar to E.B. Eliot. I'm not sure that I totally buy into it, but it is an interesting speculation or observation, whichever way you want to look at it, that the sea and the flood being the same thing, because you have the flood in chapter 12, and then you have the sea in chapter 13. He continues, we are met at the very outset of the emblems of the seven heads and the 10 horns. And there he has a drawing. And on this page, horreapocalypticae.wordpress.com, we're putting in all of the original exhibits that E.B. Eliot included with the original publication of 1865. He continues, nor can we advance satisfactorily a step further until we have discussed and solved those striking symbols as shown their applicability and appropriateness to the Roman popedom or papal empire. They will each furnish matter for a separate section, and having discussed them, we shall find then our way well prepared for comparing the character and doings of the apocalyptic beast with those of the popedom. And section one is the heads of the sea beast. Now, E.B. Eliot, in his original publication, he had the idea that the seventh and the eighth head were the same. And I think that he was wrong on some points, because he also believed that well, for example, he believed that the second beast of Revelation chapter 13 was the clergy. I believe that's what it was. And the false prophet. And I've studied this thoroughly, because a lot of people also claim or seem to have run with this idea that the false prophet and the earth beast that has two horns like a lamb and speaks as a dragon is the same as the false prophet. They're the same, but I find nothing in chapter 13 tying them together. As a matter of fact, the mention of the false prophet is only named once further on in the Revelation, and nowhere even intimated at in chapter 13. So I definitely can't tie those together. And as we've discussed before, I believe that the false prophet is the antithesis of the true prophet, which would be Jesus. So the false prophet is none other than the Antichrist himself. And I have several productions that I've done on that topic. So if you're interested in that, you can go ahead and look at it. So let's continue with the sea beast here. The heads of the sea beast. And here's a mind which has wisdom, The seven heads are seven mountains or hills, depending on the same word in the original language, on which the woman sitteth. One, that is Roman numeral one, they signified, he said, seven hills on which the woman carried by the beast was seated. Of this application and the point are very obvious, for the woman being designated as the city which then in St. John's time evidently ruled over the kings of the earth. These hills could only mean, or far-famed seven hills of Rome, and it is a characteristic as important as obvious, for it necessarily and absolutely associates the beast of the vision, inasmuch as it bore these seven heads, thus significant, with the seven-hilled Rome for its capital. I repeat the remark and must beg the reader to well mark and weigh it, for it binds the power symbolized through all its various mutations, from its earliest beginning to its end, to that same seven-hilled locality, even like one ad scriptum glebae, and as the localization essential to his very constitution and life. He continues, how precisely this characteristic answers to the Roman popes as one of the heads of the apocalyptic beast. I need not say it was the episcopal see of Rome that constituted its bishop pope and gave him the throne of the world. It was from the locality of Rome as the reputed burial place of, and that is reputed, burial place of the apostles Peter and Paul. I'm pretty sure that Paul was buried at Rome, but we have no evidence whatsoever that Peter was. I think it's more a myth that was created by the Antichrist and the Church of Rome, that because they need so desperately to place Peter at Rome to carry on their lie. And that's the next chapter. So I'm getting ahead of myself, but many of you understand what I'm talking about, that the lie that the Apostle Peter was the first pope, which it makes no sense because we all read the New Testament and we read all of the epistles and we know that it was Paul who established the church at Rome and not Peter at all. So there you go. Well, let's continue though. It was from the locality of Rome as the reputed burial place of the apostles Peter and Paul that he gathered round himself its guardian, those superstitious terrors which constituted the first principle of his power over Western Europe, and a temporary transference of the papal habitation from Rome to Avignon. And we know how long that lasted. Not very long. And will resulted in the French Revolution. Okay, but that's another story. Avignon being in France, you get the idea, in the Middle Age. Taught the popes painfully the necessity of actual residence there to their power, and that is Rome. Their thunders being proved comparatively impotent unless they were the seven thunders, i.e., as has been stated in an earlier chapter of this work, unless they issued from the seven hills. And many people don't understand. You read the book of Revelation, most people don't have a clue because they're not historicists and all they have is future speculation to go on and wild, vivid imagination, which is all you get if you don't know the history, and that the revelation is a continuous prophecy that spans the entire period of the New Testament church from the time that John wrote it until Christ comes, nothing being overlapped in time. Okay? So we understand to say that the seven thunders, remember the seven thunders uttered their voice, and it was their voice because the voice that John was hearing that was speaking to him was coming from heaven, from an angel. when the seven thunders uttered their voice, intimating that it wasn't the word of God, because he was told not to write the things that the seven thunders uttered, but to seal them up. And I believe now, and I agree with E.B. Eliot on this, that those seven thunders were the seven anathemas uttered from Rome upon the opening at the time of Martin Luther. Those seven anathemas. Okay, those are the seven thunders. And, you know, you can get the book yourself. Let's see, we have it here. And it's also on the page that if you go to the homepage on this horrorapocalyptica.wordpress.com, but you can read all about it in volume two. So go to the volume two there link and you can look for the seven thunders. Anyway, if you want to know more about that, but let's move on. And you can see the footnotes as we go along is just marvelously footnoted with historical documentation and other historical writings and so on. Just like 10,000 footnotes in the Horae Apocalypticae, and you'll find all of those here. On the other hand, this single requirement of the symbol is itself sufficient. A sufficient refutation, even were there no other objections equally insuperable, of many well-known theories of interpretation. So first as to those, which though assigning a Roman locality to the beast's first six heads, having Greek emperors, German emperors, French emperors of quite other capitals, and here we're getting into things that perhaps should have been relegated to, what is it, the history of apocalyptic interpretation, which we may go through in the second hour, continuing, kind of left it off. A lot of whole people are interested in the history of apocalyptic interpretation. What's the value of this book? Well, you could only find the value of a book like The History of Apocalyptic Interpretation if you read it, because it affords you an understanding of how much error there is when people speculate on things future. And as time passes, well, the prophecy unfolds in history and we see it clearly. So first as to those which assigning a Roman locality to the beast's first six heads. So they're trying to assign something to the heads other than the locality of Rome to the each enumerated of the seven. And, you know, I have a problem with that, although if I were to do it, I would do it quite differently, and you'll see, because we're going to talk about that a little bit as we continue here. So people have speculated that the heads represented the Greek emperors, German emperors, French emperors of quite other capitals, sought to trace the apocalyptic beast in its last or two last phases, so again as another, not a little elaborate, which refers to the beast's first origin and head to the Latin kingdom and the town of Alba Longa. So as to yet another, much affected of late by certain German and Anglo-Germanizing expositors, which would explain the beast and its heads of the seven or eight great successive variously located world powers, of which five had fallen before St. John's time, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, while the sixth, or the Roman, the only Roman, was then, and as the other one or two more remaining, their site might or might not be at Rome. Well, see, I would agree with that. If I was going to attach the seven king beasts of the following verses to the seven heads of Rome, and I'm not sure they're the same, but if I was going to attach it, because this is eventually, in time, we learn that, well, Rome sits in all these places because Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece were all amalgamated and became part of the Roman Empire. See, because beasts only assimilate, you know, that's it. And so Rome assimilated everything before it, and it was the sixth, and if one comes after it And it also assimilates that. And it's the seventh, of course, and having a prominent place in the world and appearing as so that Rome could be the one that was and is not yet is appearing as the eighth. And so this is the only way I could tie these two separate seemingly prophecies together. And we'll continue there when we get back from some messages. You're listening to Cross the Border, our Prophecy Reality Edition. Don't go anywhere. The book of Revelation says, "The spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ." This is at the very heart of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. In that spirit, we have created the Prophecy Reality News app for all of your mobile devices, streaming First Amendment Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available for your Apple, Android device, and smartphone absolutely free. Get the Prophecy Reality News app installed today so you can listen to First Amendment Radio wherever you are. The Prophecy Reality News app. Get it now. Visit crosstheborder.org. C-R-O-S-S, crosstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's crosstheborder.org.
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
Despite Nicolas Cage's promise to do his best to get Left Behind rapture answers for us, don't hold your breath. Not everyone believes Left Behind is true prophecy. Some may even regard as conspiratorial the mainstream re-release of the Left Behind movie with actor Nicolas Cage portraying the main character as an attempt to further reinforce in the minds of all this perception of false prophecy in order to condition the masses for the play about to begin. If you want true Bible prophecy answers, get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. The author exposes the Latin rapture origin, the seven-year tribulation deception, true Bible revelation of Daniel's 70 weeks, the abomination of desolation, the restrainer, America in the revelation, the image of the beast, and the mark of the beast, and the truth about God's chosen people, and so much more about Bible prophecy. This book will shatter the left-behind paradigm of future events. Get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. Visit crosstheborder.org, C-R-O-S-S, crosstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's crosstheborder.org.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Welcome back. You're listening to Cross the Border, our Prophecy Reality Edition. And today we're going, we're looking at Chapter 4, The Seven-Headed Sea Beast, of Volume 3 of the Hore Apocalypticae. And there's a link in the chat room if you want to join us. This is our quincentennial edition since E.B. Elliott went to be with the Lord in the 1860s. Many things have happened on the scene, and I believe that he would be in complete agreement with me as, 2020 hindsight is 2020 vision, and we can see clearly prophecy after it's been fulfilled in history. And that's the whole premise, the whole foundation of the historicist method of interpreting Bible prophecy. With the futurist method, all you have is speculation. It's all speculation, but they are so sure that they're right and everyone else is wrong, even though they have no way of verifying anything. So it can be nothing but speculation. But I can't really blame them. That's all they've been taught. It's all they know. It's what their pastors and their preachers and were taught in the seminary. It's what they learned sitting in the pews of their church. And nobody has ever heard practically of the historicist method of interpretation, the very method that the Bible teaches us itself. So we turn to the Bible for our interpretation. It gets so ridiculous. Sometimes you'll hear these futurists say, well, I interpret the futurists interpret the Bible, the Revelation, literally. And then they'll read about these locusts in the Revelation, and they'll say, see, those are helicopters. Well, sorry, it does not say helicopters. You of all people least interpret the Bible literally, okay? If you're going to take it literally, they have to be actual locusts and not helicopters at all. So those are obviously symbols, and there are a lot of symbols in the book of Revelation and in Daniel. But fortunately, we have relief because God gives us the interpretation of all of the symbols in the book itself. So all we have to do is look in the book for those same symbols to understand them. And then we look at divine interpretation. That's where God gives us a prophecy, and then he gives us an interpretation in the same book, even in the same chapter. And he does that plenty of times so that we can understand how his prophecy is to be interpreted. And much of the Revelation and much prophecy, you only get the prophecy and you don't get the interpretation. But where God has given us interpretation, that is our lesson, you know. That is our schoolroom where we learn how to interpret his prophecy. And we use the Bible to interpret itself. The Bible is its own dictionary and so on. That's the way it should be handled, not like the futurists handle it with total speculation while claiming to believe it literally. You know, it's like Daniel's 70th week. They say, well, we take it literally, but they don't believe Daniel's 70th week literally. They don't believe that the Messiah showed up when he did, even though it's verified in Malachi chapter 3 that he was the messenger of the covenant. When Daniel chapter 7, 70 week, chapter 9, 70 weeks prophecy says that he shall confirm the covenant, they don't believe it. They want to put the Antichrist in there. And also, they don't believe it's 70 weeks, actually. They believe it's 69 weeks plus an undetermined period of time, and then a 70th week. See, that's not literal at all. Even Chuck Missler, one of the granddaddies, the big poopahs of futurism, he said, you would think by the plain reading of the text that the 70 weeks are contiguous. But he digresses and goes on, but they're not. Yeah, what? Well, I would think by reading, I agree with him when he says that you would think by the plain reading of the text that the 70 weeks are contiguous. Of course I would. Why would I think anything else? That's what it says. It doesn't say something else. So they are contiguous. And there's no evidence or any indication anywhere in the text, in the book of Daniel, in the entire Bible, that they are not contiguous. It's just a whole made-up fantasy so that the Antichrist could take the place, instead of being the Pope of Rome, being some guy that shows up in the future, but taking the place of Christ in the 70 weeks prophecy. Okay, enough on that. We better jump back into our text. We're probably going to have to spend several hours, the whole program today on this. Let me visit the chat room for a minute here and say hi to everybody. Carrie Ann, Bass Track, Wacky, WW, Blue Raven, Studio, well, that's me, Far Out Mike, and Engelchen. Thank you all for showing up. Okay, well, no comments or questions in the chat room. I guess we'll just jump back into the text here. And you got the page there, so if you're following along with me, I'm going to continue. Oh no, I'm going to back up a paragraph for continuity here. On the other hand, this single requirement of the symbol is of itself a sufficient refutation, even were there no other objections equally insuperable of many well-known theories of interpretation. Okay, so what he's saying here is that there are other theories about what the seven heads represent. Okay, well, I don't have a theory about what the seven hills. I believe that the seven hills represent Rome, and they may represent the seven beast powers that have ruled over the earth. They may, but it's not necessary in the text, and I'm not sure of that. And I think trying to put these two prophecies together, just because one immediately follows the other in the text, I think it adds to more confusion. So when we're talking about, toward the end of this one, he says, so and yet another, much affected of late by certain German and Anglo-Germanizing expositors, hey, well, I'm German descent, which would explain the beast and its heads. And see, that's not true. It doesn't explain the beast and its heads. It explains the seven king beasts from verses, I believe, 10 and 11. We'll get to that in a second, of Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, while the sixth, or Roman, contemporary with John. So we're talking about the king beasts, not the heads, because the word heads isn't even in that prophecy or riddle, some would say it, or enigma, mystery, utterance there, the only Roman, and then was said as the other to be one or two more remaining, which there were two more remaining if Rome was the sixth king beast present with John, and then the seventh is not yet, but when he comes must remain for a short space or something like that, but we'll get to it in a second. He says these may, however, be more or well less suited to the seven king beasts of the following verses, which will be our next topic of discussion. So moving on there. Roman numeral 2. The seven kings and several thoughts on their relation to the sea beasts. Revelation 17:10. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was, and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth to perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Okay. So a second, though less obvious or more speculative interpretation of the mystery declared by the angel symbolized by the seven kings of verse 10 is that they are the same as the beast's seven heads from the previous verse. The number of different successive governing heads of the beast, of bestial character, that is, of lines or classes of heathen like ruling governors, or as might be said, forms of government, which are not another beast or empire, but the same individual seven hills of which the Roman Empire would be under, from the first to the last, from its early origin to its final destruction, there being here premised, however, by the angel one additional and very important notification, as necessary to be taken into the account in the solution of the part of the enigma that the seventh head king visible on the apocalyptic beast would be in order of existence, its eighth. His meaning in this is easily seen insofar as the symbol itself is concerned by reference to the statement so emphatically made and repeated respecting the beast when exhibited in the vision of chapter 13 that one of the heads appeared to have been wounded, as it were, to death by the sword, but that his deadly wound was healed. Now see, this is where this leads to confusion, this speculation though, because how can the seventh be the eighth? You wouldn't need an eighth enumerated unless there were an intermediary seventh. So you can't go have 7-7, it has to be 7-8, but the eighth is of the seven, but it can't be the seventh, otherwise you wouldn't need an eighth. You see what I'm saying? That's confusion. So we continue on here. Let me put this back on the screen here so anyone's following along, they can continue. And as I said, this is at horapocalyptica.wordpress.com, Volume 3, Chapter 4, if you want to check it out for yourself. Okay, the foregoing speculations overlook the prepositional phrase, verse 17:10, "and there are," and instead interprets the text as though it were written, "and they are." And you know, I looked into this quite a bit, and the same Greek phrase can be interpreted, "and they are," but it is context sensitive. Okay? And I don't believe the context supports "and they are." E.B. Eliot did, and others did, but I don't believe it supports it. I agree with the King James translators, and you're going to find out why here. Without explanation or debate, presumably identifying the king beasts of verse 10 and 11 as the preceding heads, but ignoring the text's identification, verse 11, of the eighth king, and that's Basileus in the Greek, as a beast, in the Greek, Therion, therefore not necessarily a continued exposition of the seven heads, which are the Greek word for capital or hill or mountain, okay? Because we have Capitol Hill in America. Capitol Hill, that's the head hill, the head mountain. But that's two words. But in the Greek, it's kephala or something like that. Contrary description from verse 9. So you see that's why I agree with the rendition of the King James Version translators. It should be they translate it and there are and not and they are. See? They overlook the prepositional phrase, "and there are seven kings." Okay? And they interpret it as though it says, "and they are," meaning the seven heads are seven kings. So that, I think that leads to a lot of confusion. Okay. Verses 10 and 11 are rather an enumeration and recapitulation of the individual dominating beast, that's Therion, powers of which the eighth cannot be the seventh, but must be the sixth, the Roman power contemporary with John, because it is Rome, and already defined by Daniel as the great iron empire or portion of the mystery Babylon image as being destroyed by the coming of Christ to set up his kingdom. And in Daniel chapter 7 as the fourth and last beast, therefore must be identified as the same as described in Revelation 17 as going to perdition. Okay, on the alternative, if taken as "and they are," a double meaning could result, and one, the previously described famed seven hills of Rome on which the woman sitteth, the other as follows, or both may be allowed by the text and original language. Let's examine what the scripture reveals about these beast powers. 1. Rome, the Revelation chapter 13 sea beast, is described as having leopard, bear, and lion features. These features being those of the three Daniel 7 beasts that preceded in succession and were conquered by it, This would account for four of the seven kings or beasts. 2. Revelation 17:11 enumerates seven beast powers total in succession, with one reasserting itself at the end, being numbered as the eighth, one of the seven. 3. The sixth, being contemporary with John, necessitates reaching back in the history of Daniel and Israel for the previous five world or Israel dominating ruling powers, which only the three immediately previous are explicitly named as beasts in Daniel 7. We must intently examine the shared attributes of the four explicitly named beast powers: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, before we can determine who the remaining or unnamed beasts are. 1. Each of these four beast powers were individually original powers when they rose up. 2. Each then conquered and assimilated the ones before them and dominated the territory and peoples of its predecessors, having risen up from the same locality, the sea or waters or flood. The interpretation of the symbol waters from Revelation 17:15 as peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues verifies the like symbol as referring to the old world locality, whereas a flood would represent conquests of warfare. 3. None of these powers are a division of any of those preceding it. They only assimilate. 4. They all dominated the Israel of God before Christ, national Israel. After Christ, the church, the supranational Israel of God, along with the other nations around them. 70 weeks were determined for national Israel, which terminated with the final week, during which the Messiah, Jesus, appeared to confirm the covenant, according to Daniel chapter 9, after which the gospel went to the nations and God's chosen people became a supranational Catholic, meaning universal, church. And that is a church in all nations. That's the meaning of the word supranational, transcending national boundaries. There yet remain two unnamed beast powers preceding the four sea beasts of Daniel 7. These were previously named as Egypt and Assyria, both meeting the criteria as dominating national Israel immediately before Babylon, by whom they were both, along with Israel, conquered and assimilated. After Rome, the and one is concurrent with John, the one yet future is not yet come, can only be enumerated as the seventh, as it remains otherwise unnamed by the text itself. The Revelation, specifically chapter 13, has the only mention of an additional beast power rising up. So it must be our seventh king beast. We will examine this seventh beast in our following chapter 4. And so that's going to be examined in another chapter. And then we move on to section 2, the 10 horns of the beast. And I think we're going to leave it off there for the day. Let's see if we have any questions, comments, or anything in the chat room. Anyone wants to call in? We got a few minutes if you have any questions. WW says, you could oughta put the publication. Oh, I already read that. Okay, I guess nobody's got any questions. Everyone must be just as mesmerized as I am by the Hori Apocalypticae. Of course, I'm probably more mesmerized by it than anybody else that I know anyway, since I've spent more time with it than anyone else. Okay. So anyway, go to horiapocalypticae.wordpress.com and check it out there. If you are interested in a hardback publication, we also have it available in softback. You go to that page there at horiapocalypticae.wordpress.com and you'll find a link where you can buy these and you can have it for your library. We only have volume 1 and 2 published so far, but as you can see, I'm working on the quincentennial Reformation edition for the now that we've had 500 years of the Reformation and we just celebrated the quincentennial, I think it's time to put out the quincentennial edition and update it up to the date that we are at. So from this point on, as you can see, we're doing a little bit of updating, but I'm not omitting anything in the original. As a matter of fact, there's an entire section that I moved to the appendix, so you'll find it there. And as I said, some of that stuff should be relegated to a work like, which we're going to jump back into in the next hour, The History of Apocalyptic Interpretation, because it was entirely speculative. And I'm sure that that E.B. Eliot, if he were alive today and he's seen how things have progressed, he would agree with me. And, well, we'll save all of that for next week. Okay. W.W. says it's good stuff. Carrie Ann says she loves it. Okay. And I'm enjoying it too. So anyway, thank you for those words of encouragement. I do appreciate you all. Okay. My website is crosstheborder.org. Make sure if you're listening, you go there and you subscribe to my blog. And there's a support button on my blog. Either support me directly there or support First Amendment Radio. Either way, I am the main labor behind all of this effort here, with friends like Tom Fress and others. Very few others that really are deep into the historicist method. We are a very small voice out here, and it's a voice that needs to get louder. But I find more people daily are coming over to the historicist view of prophecy. And a lot of them are stuck in the past, 1865 or 1900. But a lot has happened since then. And that's why I like to republish a lot of these works and update them. Because, I mean, E.B. Eliot, up to the time he lived, he was right on about everything. There is no way that he could have seen how America would evolve. He could only guess, but his speculation was wrong because he placed America, the prophecy of America, on other things, trying desperately and very strained applications that he made with those things to where they did not belong.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.